Fightful.com. Famous Men of the Middle Ages, Part 5. Rollo the Viking, who died in 931 AD. For more than 200 years during the Middle Ages, the Christian countries of Europe were attacked on the southwest by the Saracens of Spain, and on the northwest by the Norsemen, or Northmen. The Northmen were so called because they came into Middle Europe from the north. Sometimes they were called Vikings, or pirates, because they were adventurous sea robbers who plundered all countries which they could reach by sea. Their ships were long and swift. In the centre was placed a single mast, which carried one large sail. For the most part, however, the Norsemen depended on rowing, not on the wind, and sometimes there were 20 rowers in one vessel. The Vikings were a terror to all their neighbours, but the two regions that suffered most from their attacks were the island of Britain and that part of Charlemagne's empire in which the Franks were settled. Nearly 50 times in 200 years the lands of the Franks were invaded. The Vikings sailed up the large rivers into the heart of the region which we now call France and captured and pillaged cities and towns. Some years after Charlemagne's death, they went as far as his capital, Aix, took the place, and stabled their horses in the cathedral which the great emperor had built. In the year 860, they discovered Iceland and made a settlement upon its shores. A few years later, they sailed as far as Greenland and there established settlements which existed for about a century. These Vikings were the first discoverers of the continent on which we live. Ancient books found in Iceland tell the story of the discovery. It is related that a Viking ship was driven during a storm to a strange coast, which is thought to have been that part of America now known as Labrador. When the captain of the ship returned home, he told what he had seen. His tale so excited the curiosity of a young Viking prince called Leif the Lucky that he sailed to the newly discovered coast. Going ashore, he found that the country abounded in wild grapes, and so he called it Vinland, or the land of vines. Vinland is thought to have been a part of what is now the Rhode Island coast. The Vikings were not aware that they had found a great unknown continent. No one in the more civilized parts of Europe knew anything about their discovery, and after a while, the story of the Vinland voyages seems to have been forgotten, even among the Vikings themselves. So it is not to them that we owe the discovery of America, but to Columbus, because his discovery, though nearly 500 years later than that of the Norsemen, actually made known to all Europe, for all time, the existence of the New World. The Vikings had many able chieftains. One of the most famous was Rollo the Walker, so called because he was such a giant that no horse strong enough to carry him could be found, and therefore he always had to walk. However, he did on foot what few could do on horseback. In 885, 700 ships, commanded by Rollo and other Viking chiefs, left the harbours of Norway, sailed to the mouth of the Seine, and started up the river to capture the city of Paris. Rollo and his men stopped on their way to Rouen, which was also on the Seine, but nearer its mouth. The citizens had heard of the giant, and when they saw the river covered by his fleet, they were dismayed. However, the Bishop of Rouen told them that Rollo could be as noble and generous as he was fierce, and he advised them to open their gates and trust to the mercy of the Viking chief. This was done, and Rollo marched into Rouen and took possession of it. The bishop had given good advice, for Rollo treated the people very kindly. Soon after capturing Rouen, he left the place, sailed up the river to Paris, and joined the other Viking chiefs. And now, for 6 long miles, the beautiful Seine was covered with Viking vessels, which carried an army of 30,000 men. A noted warrior named Ude was Count of Paris, and he had advised the Parisians to fortify the city. So not long before the arrival of Rollo and his companions, 2 walls with strong gates had been built around the city. It was no easy task for even Vikings to capture a strongly walled city. We are told that Rollo and his men built a high tower and rolled it on wheels up to the walls. At its top was a floor well manned with soldiers. But the people within the city shot hundreds of arrows at the besiegers and threw down rocks or poured boiling oil and pitch upon them. The Vikings thought to starve the Parisians, and for 13 months they encamped around the city. At length, food became very scarce, and Count Ude determined to go for help. He went out through one of the gates on a dark, stormy night and rode post-haste to the king. He told him that something must be done to save the people of Paris. So the king gathered an army and marched to the city. No battle was fought. The Vikings seemed to have been afraid to risk one. They gave up the siege, and Paris was relieved. Rollo and his men went to the Duchy of Burgundy, where, as now, the finest crops were raised and the best of wines were made. Perhaps, after a time, Rollo and his Vikings went home, but we do not know what he did for about 25 years. We do know that he abandoned his old home in Norway in 911. Then he and his people sailed from the icy shores of Norway and again went up the Seine in hundreds of Viking vessels. Of course, on arriving in the land of the Franks, Rollo at once began to plunder towns and farms. Charles, then king of the Franks, although his people called him the Simple or the Senseless, had sense enough to see that this must be stopped. So he sent a message to Rollo and proposed that they should have a talk about peace. Rollo agreed, and accordingly they met. The king and his troops stood on one side of a little river, and Rollo with his Vikings stood on the other. Messages passed between them. The king asked Rollo what he wanted. "Let me and my people live in the land of the Franks. Let us make ourselves homes here, and I and my Vikings will become your vassals," answered Rollo. He asked for Rouen and the neighbouring land. So the king gave him that part of Francia, and ever since it has been called Normandy, the land of the Northmen. When it was decided that the Vikings should settle in Francia and be subjects of the Frankish king, Rollo was told that he must kiss the foot of Charles, in token that he would be the king's vassal. The haughty Viking refused. "Never," said he, "will I bend my knee before any man, and no man's foot will I kiss." After some persuasion, however, he ordered one of his men to perform the act of homage for him. The king was on horseback, and the Norseman, standing by the side of the horse, suddenly seized the king's foot and drew it up to his lips. This almost made the king fall from his horse, to the great amusement of the Norsemen. Becoming a vassal to the king meant that if the king went to war, Rollo would be obliged to join the army and bring a certain number of armed men, 1,000 or more. Rollo now granted parts of Normandy to his leading men on condition that they would bring soldiers to his army and fight under him. They became his vassals, as he was the king's vassal. The lands granted to vassals in this way were called feuds, and this plan of holding lands was called the feudal system. It was established in every country of Europe during the Middle Ages. The poorest people were called serfs. They were almost slaves and were never permitted to leave the estate to which they belonged. They did all the work. They worked chiefly for the landlords, but partly for themselves. Having been a robber himself, Rollo knew what a shocking thing it was to ravage and plunder, and he determined to change his people's habits. He made strict laws and hanged robbers. His duchy thus became one of the safest parts of Europe. The Northmen learned the language of the Franks and adopted their religion. The story of Rollo is especially interesting to us because Rollo was the forefather of that famous Duke of Normandy who less than 150 years later conquered England and brought into that country the Norman nobles with their French language and customs.
You're tuned in to Radio Aryan.
Alfred the Great, king from 871 to 901 AD. The Danes were neighbours of the Norwegian Vikings, and like them, were fond of the sea and piracy. They plundered the English coasts for more than a century, and most of northern and eastern England became for a time a Danish country with Danish kings. What saved the rest of the country to the Saxons was the courage of the great Saxon king, Alfred. Alfred was the son of Ethelwulf, king of the West Saxons. He had a loving mother who brought him up with great care. Up to the age of 12, it is said, he was not able to read well, in spite of the efforts of his mother and others to teach him. When Alfred was a boy, there were no printed books. The wonderful art of printing was not invented until about the year 1440, nearly 600 years later than Alfred's time. Moreover, the art of making paper had not yet been invented. Consequently, the few books in use in Alfred's time were written by skillful pen men who wrote generally on leaves of parchment, which was sheepskin carefully prepared so that it might retain ink. One day, Alfred's mother showed him and his elder brothers a beautiful volume which contained a number of the best Saxon ballads. Some of the words in this book were written in brightly coloured letters, and upon many of the leaves were painted pictures of gaily dressed knights and ladies. "Oh, what a lovely book!" exclaimed the boys. "Yes, it is lovely," replied the mother. "I will give it to whichever of you children can read it the best in a week." Alfred began at once to take lessons in reading and studied hard day after day. His brothers passed their time in amusements and made fun of Alfred's efforts. They thought he could not learn to read as well as they could, no matter how hard he should try. At the end of the week, the boys read the book to their mother, one after the other. Much to the surprise of his brothers, Alfred proved to be the best reader, and his mother gave him the book. While still very young, Alfred was sent by his father to Rome to be anointed by His Holiness the Pope. It was a long and tiresome journey, made mostly on horseback. With imposing solemn ceremony, he was anointed by the Holy Father. Afterwards, he spent a year in Rome, receiving religious instruction. In the year 871, when Alfred was 22 years old, the Danes invaded various parts of England. Some great battles were fought, and Alfred's elder brother, Ethelred, king of the West Saxons, was killed. Thus, Alfred became king. The Danes still continued to fight the Saxons and defeated Alfred in a long and severe struggle. They took for themselves the northern and eastern parts of England. Moreover, Danes from Denmark continued to cross the sea and ravage the coast of Saxon England. They kept the people in constant alarm. Alfred, therefore, determined to meet the pirates on their own element, the sea. So he built and equipped the first English navy, and in 875 gained the first naval victory ever won by the English. A few years after this, however, great numbers of Danes from the northern parts of England came pouring into the Saxon lands. Alfred himself was obliged to flee for his life. For many months, he wandered through forests and over hills to avoid being taken by the Danes. He sometimes made his home in caves and in the huts of shepherds and cowherds. Often he tended the cattle and sheep, and was glad to get a part of the farmer's dinner in pay for his services. Once, when very hungry, he went into the house of a cowherd and asked for something to eat. The cowherd's wife was baking cakes, and she said she would give him some when they were done. "Watch the cakes, and do not let them burn, while I go across the field to look after the cows," said the woman as she hurried away. Alfred took his seat in the chimney corner to do as he was told, but soon his thoughts turned to his troubles and he forgot about the cakes. When the woman came back, she cried out with vexation, for the cakes were burned and spoiled. "You lazy good-for-nothing man," she said, "I warrant you can eat cakes fast enough, but you are too lazy to help me bake them." With that, she drove the poor hungry Alfred out of her house. In his ragged dress, he certainly did not look like a king, and she had no idea that he was anything but a poor beggar. Some of Alfred's friends discovered where he was hiding and joined him. In a little time, a body of soldiers came to him, and a strong fort was built by them. From this fort, Alfred and his men went out now and then and gave battle to small parties of the Danes. Alfred was successful, and his army grew larger and larger. One day he disguised himself as a wandering minstrel and went into the camp of the Danes. He strolled here and there, playing on a harp and singing Saxon ballads. At last, Guthrum, the commander of the Danes, ordered the minstrel to be brought to his tent. Alfred went. "Sing to me some of your charming songs," said Guthrum. "I never heard more beautiful music." So the kingly harper played and sang for the Dane, and went away with handsome presents. But better than that, he had gained information that was of the greatest value. In a week, he attacked the Danish forces and defeated them with a great slaughter in a battle which lasted all day and far into the night. Guthrum was taken prisoner and brought before Alfred. Taking his harp in his hands, Alfred played and sang one of the ballads with which he had entertained Guthrum in the camp. The Dane started in amazement and exclaimed, "You then, King Alfred, with a wandering minstrel?" "Yes," replied Alfred, "I was the musician whom you received so kindly. Your life is now in my hands, but I will give you your liberty if you will become a Christian and never again make war upon my people." "King Alfred," said Guthrum, "I will become a Christian, and so will all my men, if you will grant liberty to them, as well as to me, and henceforth we will be your friends." Alfred then released the Danes, and they were baptized as Christians. An old road running across England from London to Chester was then agreed upon as the boundary between the Danish and the Saxon kingdoms, and the Danes settled in East Anglia, as the eastern part of England was called. Years of peace and prosperity followed for Alfred's kingdom. During these years, the king rebuilt the towns that had been destroyed by the Danes. He erected new forts and greatly strengthened his army and navy. He also encouraged trade, and he founded a school like that established by Charlemagne. He himself translated a number of Latin books into Saxon and probably did more for the cause of education than any other king that ever wore the English crown.
You're listening to Radio Arian at RadioArian.com.
Henry the Fowler, king from 919 to 936 AD. About 100 years had passed since the death of Charlemagne, and his great empire had fallen to pieces. 7 kings ruled where he had once been the sole emperor. West of the Rhine, where the Germans lived, the last descendant of Charlemagne died when he was a mere boy. The German nobles were not willing for any foreign prince to govern them, and yet they saw that they must unite to defend their country against the invasions of the barbarians called Magyars. So they met and elected Conrad, Duke of Franconia, to be their king. However, although he became king in name, Conrad never had much power over his nobles. Some of them refused to recognize him as king, and his reign was disturbed by quarrels and wars. He died in 919, and on his deathbed he said to his brother, "Henry, Duke of Saxony, is the ablest ruler in the empire. Elect him king, and Germany will have peace." A few months after Conrad's death, the nobles met at Aix-la-Chapelle and elected Henry to be their king. At this time, it was the custom in Europe to hunt various birds, such as the wild duck and partridge, with falcons. The falcons were long-winged birds of prey, resembling hawks. They were trained to perch on their master's wrist and wait patiently until they were told to fly. Then they would swiftly dart at their prey and bear it to the ground. Henry was very fond of falconry, and hence was known as Henry the Fowler, or Falconer. As soon as the other dukes had elected him king, a messenger was sent to Saxony to inform him of the honour done to him. After a search of some days, he was at last found far up in the Harz Mountains, hunting with his falcons. Kneeling at his feet, the messenger said, "God save you, Henry of Saxony. I come to announce the death of King Conrad, and to tell you that the nobles have elected you to succeed him as King of the Germans." For a moment, the Duke was speechless with amazement. Then he exclaimed, "Elected me king? I cannot believe it. I am a Saxon, and King Conrad was a Frank and a bitter enemy to me." "It is true," replied the messenger. "Conrad, when dying, advised that the nobles should choose you as his successor." Henry was silent for a while, and then he said, "King Conrad was a good man. I know it now, and I am sorry that I did not understand him better when he was alive. I accept the position offered to me, and I pray that I may be guided by heaven in ruling this people." So Henry the Fowler left the chase to take up his duties as King of the Germans. In proper time, Henry was proclaimed King of Germany, but he was hardly seated on the throne when the country was invaded by thousands of Magyars from the land which we now know as Hungary. As soon as possible, Henry gathered an army and marched to meet the barbarians. He came upon a small force under the command of the son of the Magyar king. The Germans easily routed the Magyars and took the king's son prisoner. This proved to be a very fortunate thing, because it stopped the war for a long term of years. When the Magyar king learned that his son was a prisoner in the hands of King Henry, he was overwhelmed with grief. He mourned for his son day and night, and at last sent to the German camp a Magyar chief with a flag of truce to beg that the prince might be given up. "Our king says that he will give whatever you demand for the release of his son," said the chief to the German monarch. "I will give up the prince on this condition only," was the reply. "The Magyars must leave the soil of Germany immediately and promise not to war upon us for 9 years. During those years, I will pay to the king yearly 5,000 pieces of gold." "I accept the terms in the king's name," responded the chief. The prince was therefore given up, and the Magyars withdrew. During the 9 years of truce, King Henry paid great attention to the organization of an army. Before this, the German soldiers had fought chiefly on foot, not, as the Magyars did, on horseback. For this reason, they were at a great disadvantage in battle. The king now raised a strong force of horsemen and had them drilled so thoroughly that they became almost invincible. The infantry also were carefully drilled. Besides this, Henry built a number of forts in different parts of his kingdom and had all the fortified cities made stronger. The following year, the Magyar chief appeared at the German court and demanded a tenth payment. "Not a piece of gold will be given you," replied King Henry. "Our truce is ended." In less than a week, a vast body of Magyars entered Germany to renew the war, but Henry held his army in waiting until lack of food compelled the barbarians to divide their forces into two separate bodies. One division was sent to one part of the country and the other to another part. Henry completely routed both divisions, and the power of the Magyars in Germany was broken. The Danes also invaded Henry's kingdom, but he defeated them and drove them back too. Henry reigned for 18 years, and when he died, all Germany was peaceful and prosperous. His son Otto succeeded him. He assumed the title of Emperor, which Charlemagne had borne more than 100 years before. From that time on, for nearly 1,000 years, all the German emperors claimed to be the successors of Charlemagne. They called their domain the Holy Roman Empire and took the title Emperor, or Emperor of the Romans, until the year 1806, when Francis II resigned it.
You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.